Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Back from the extended break. Why did you want to take a holiday break, Mike?
Sober up.
To sober up?
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, you crazy Englishmen, even over here in the States, you guys still drink the night away. I don't understand it, but we're back. How many weeks were we out?
Two.
I mean, we did put out a lot of episodes when we were in Phoenix for the Jacobs Chavez Jr. fight, so does that supplement the rest of the episodes?
Yeah, we did, what, three episodes, four interviews?
Yeah, three, four.
I believe so, and then we missed Hearn. A week, and then was back, so
yeah.
1 week off, really.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
But that whole Phoenix trip for the Jacob Chavez, we got a lot of content there, so.
I was still drunk from all the free beer. It was flying over my
right?
head.
Yeah, that was a wild night. But thanks again, guys, for sticking with us, especially here in the new year, 2020. Happy New Year to all of our listeners of the Last Round Podcast. This is episode 63 and the first one of 2020, a new decade, Mike. 2020, a new decade. So, you know, if you're still sticking with us, we appreciate it. So we don't have anything to review, just before we came on air, right, Mike? We talked about, like, there's really nothing to review from this past weekend, week-ish, right?
No, nothing from last weekend. Kind of a quiet week. Week before was Gervonta Davis, obviously getting the win over Gamboa.
Mm-hmm. In Atlanta.
Just.
In Atlanta. We should, well, you know what? I think we could start with that. We should start with that. I mean, let's go into that, even though that was a couple weeks ago, because we haven't really touched on it ever since, you know, the interviews that we uploaded with Eddie Hearn. If you haven't listened to our Eddie Hearn interview we did in Phoenix, guys, it's about, what, a 40, 45-minute interview?
Yeah, about 40 minutes, yeah.
We did it in the lobby of the Fighter Hotel in downtown Phoenix. And Eddie Hearn, you know, he could talk, right? I mean, he could talk. You know, that was our first time being able to interview him. And I want to give a shout-out to Andrew McCart of IFL TV, who we also interviewed because he was able to help us out with that interview and you know, talk to Eddie and some stuff like that. So we appreciate that. So if you haven't listened to that interview, go back to our previous episodes and take a listen, because, you know, Eddie Hearn can talk and he gives a lot of inside scoop on the business side of things from a promoter standpoint. But going back to Tank Davis and Gamboa fighting in Atlanta, this was for the WBA regular, right? 135-pound world title. Gamboa gets the stoppage win. What was it, in the 11th or 12th?
So I'm just looking up just to make sure.
It was a later rounds like that. It was somewhere around there. But
12th.
It was a 12th. You know, he fights Gamboa, who, you know, I mean, Gamboa really hasn't been the same fighter that he was like maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. But before we dive into the actual analysis of the fight, there was a lot of people who showed up in that city. What was it, like 14,000?
Yeah, you got a good turnout for that city. I don't know whether it was just because
they never get fights.
Yeah, I was going to say, is Davis the big name that he thinks he is, or is it just the fact that Atlanta don't get the big fights?
Well, that's what I was thinking. I don't doubt that Davis is known. I think his stock has risen in terms of profile and stuff. Mayweather has, like, pushed him. Mayweather Promotions has helped him. You know, there's a lot of rappers that like, they'll tweet about him, or a lot of celebrities who they'll tweet about him during his fights when he's fighting. So I don't doubt that he's known. But, I mean, having the fight in Atlanta, you know, would they draw that crowd in, like, a – What's an arena over here in the LA area that holds like 14,000 people?
The Forum?
The Forum? I mean, would he sell out the Forum like that?
The Honda Center?
The Honda Center in Anaheim, California? Would he sell out the Honda Center or the Forum in LA?
No.
Against Gamboa like that?
What did Sean Porter and Errol Spence do?
The Staples Center? Well, yeah, what did they do? I forgot.
I don't think they sold it out because if I remember rightly, they priced the tickets so highly that it didn't sell that well. And it was also a pay-per-view. So,
and they had to pay their purses too.
Yeah, so I don't think it sold that well. Probably less. Yeah. Probably less than.
I mean, you know, it's great. It's great that like he got that many people to show up, you know, for the good of the sport. 14,000 people in pretty much a city that hasn't got boxing in a long time. That pretty much isn't recognized as a boxing city. That's great. I'm not against that. I think that's awesome. But you're right, though. Like, I think it's fair to criticize that, you know, did Davis just draw because Atlanta doesn't get that many fights? So they're just like, oh, let's go out. Have a night on the town, go watch some fights, and after we go out and drink and party. You know, or is he a star and does he have the drawing power, you know? And they're talking about he needs to be on pay-per-view and stuff. I mean, like, I don't agree with that. I wouldn't put him on pay-per-view yet because if you're going to put him on pay-per-view, you need somebody across from him that's going to be able to draw with him.
I think that's maybe the reason that the first name out of his mouth has been Leo Santa Cruz. If you're going to do a pay-per-view...
But Santa Cruz is too small for him. But in terms of name power, I understand that. But even like...
But if you were a fighter like him, or if I was a fighter, the first thing I would do when I moved on to pay-per-view is I'd like, get yourself a big-named Mexican star.
That's
going to... The pay-per-views are probably going to come from Leo Santa Cruz because he has a following.
That's true.
Look, Mikey Garcia and Errol Spence.
Yeah.
I would guarantee you if you could look those numbers up... 70% of them probably came from Mikey.
Oh yeah, I don't dispute that, and then people say like, oh well, Spence and Porter drew like around the same type of pay per view numbers and stuff like that. I mean, you know, which they probably did. I mean, supposedly that's what was reported, but you're right though. Like, if you have a Hispanic or a Mexican fighter across from you, they're gonna bring in fans, just like you said. Mikey brought in with Spence, arguably brought in more buys from his side than Spence did, arguably. And you're right. I mean, I think Tank Davis knocks out Santa Cruz. I just think that Santa Cruz is too small for him. I even thought when he was supposed to fight Abner Mars over here at the StubHub Center, I thought Abner Mars was going to get killed. Davis is he's just too big. He's too big of a guy. Like, come on, like he had trouble making 130 multiple times. So he moves up to 135, and he still misses weight. But he comes back after, what, an hour or two, and he made the weight. But it's just like, come on, man. Like, you moved up because you had trouble making the weight before. And I what do you think his natural weight is? Like, in terms of, like, if you can just look at him and say, okay, you fight at this weight.
He's got the Broner problem. He just doesn't have the discipline outside to keep a good weight. Broner's too small for 147, you know.
That's why he goes to 140.
Yeah, you know, and then fighting at 140. He would be better, you know, when Broner was at 130, 135, you know, he was like mopping people up. Same as Davis. You know, Davis is too small. He could probably do 135 if he's talking about going up to 140, you know, fighting people like Josh Taylor and stuff like that. He's going to be far too small in terms of stature, you know. If he was disciplined, 130, maybe 135, because either Gamboa suddenly grew a great chin or Davis's power didn't come up to 135 with him.
Right.
Or did Davis just take it too lightly, didn't have a good training camp, you know, messed around and stuff like that because maybe he thought Gamboa was just kind of given to him, you know, a vacant belt, give him an easy match against a 37-year-old washed Gamboa.
That's what I think.
And he just didn't take it. You know, he took him lightly.
Yeah, that's what I think. And I think ideally that was a plan. You know, whether Mayweather Promotions admits or not, I mean, you know, Mayweather knows what he's doing. You know,
a one-legged Gamboa.
Yeah, supposedly he ripped his Achilles or something like that, right?
And, you know, the commentary team kept thinking it was a wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
And they pulled out the tape and just taped his foot up during one of the rounds.
Yeah. But I mean, like, if that's true, I mean, supposedly it was true that he got examined by the doctors after and it was torn or he broke it or whatever. I mean, that's impressive. You got to give him credit, especially for Gamboa not being the fighter that he is or he was. You know, yeah, Tank Davis still stopped him in the 12th. But, you know, people thought, I mean, like me and you, I think we talked about before, at least off air, that I think we thought Gamboa would have been stopped way earlier.
Yeah, it looked like he was a picked opponent. I think months ago when we saw that he'd been picked up by the PBC, you could kind of see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
That was going to be, you know, because he was down in Florida training down there, had a couple of easy wins to get back into the win column. PBC picked him up and you're like, okay, here we go. Here's some more cannon fodder because he still has that name. You know, people...
Yeah, put him on the resume.
Yeah, people can remember what he was like, you know, that bit of a destroying machine. So, you know, for Davis, it's good. Are we going to see a year eventually where he fights, you know, some actual names? You know, Pedraza, probably still the biggest name.
That's probably his best win.
On his record at the minute. So, you know, Lomachenko would be good. Leo Santa Cruz would be good.
As a name, but as an opponent, I think Santa Cruz gets knocked out. I just think Davis is too big for him.
I agree. I think in terms of power and also the fact that Leo Santa Cruz is, you know, pillow fisted.
But you know what?
He's not going to be able to back him up.
I don't see that happening either because
Uncle Al loves.
Because Al Heyman loves Santa Cruz. He does. Like he cares for him a lot, supposedly. And it's not like we've been like we're speculating on this. We've been told by somebody within the PBC that this is true.
Yeah, it's true.
So
yeah.
I don't see that. I don't see them feeding because obviously the ideal plan would be for Davis to get the win because he has the bigger upside in terms of popularity. And I just don't see Heyman doing that to Santa Cruz. I don't see it.
I think it's the Mexican fans thing. You know, he knows that having a four-weight world champion with that legion of fans.
He's not a four-weight. It's not four-weight. That doesn't count. I mean, I guess it's like in the record books now technically, but it doesn't count. Come on. Like, if you really think if you ask Santa Cruz, like, point blank, like, in a serious conversation, he's going to be like, yeah. Come on.
Vacant title, but it's still there. Like you say, it's in the record books. You can't.
I mean, I guess.
When we get him on,
But who else is a four-weight world champion? Mikey Garcia?
Manny Pacquiao is more than that.
Well, I'm talking about Mexicans. Barrera?
What's Canelo, 3 or 4?
4.
That was his fourth, 150, right?
154, 160, 168, if you want to count 168 and then 175.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't see Davis and Santa Cruz fighting. If anything, they'll feed him Abner Morris. They'll try to feed him again. They'll try to feed Abner Morris to him. Because Abner Morris, I think PBC and them, they see that Abner Morris, like, his career is pretty much done because of his injuries, his eye injuries.
I wouldn't feed him to Davis then.
Yeah.
He'll finish that eye off.
Exactly. Well, that's why I thought when he was going to fight him, I was like, he's going to kill him. I was like, he's way too small for him. Mahrez and Santa Cruz are just way too small. Like, and Davis just has his powers just too much for them. So I can honestly see, like, them saying, like, oh, let's make the Mahrez fight again, you know? And, you know, and then because Abner Mahrez has that gig on the Fox channel where, you know, an analysis and all that stuff. He's kind of like expendable, you know, especially because, like I said, his injuries. So, I wouldn't be surprised if you hear rumblings about, oh, you know, they're going to try to make the Abner Mahrez fight again, and Mahrez moves up to 130. Like, I mean, didn't they say that Davis like could still go to 130 if there's like a big fight down there?
I could see that. I just don't know. Is he disciplined enough? Like you said, he struggled to make 135.
Right. You're right. But I think for like Amaras, they would tell him to go back down.
See, that's a fight like Lomachenko. That's another fight we'd like to see. You know, you've got an explosive puncher against a more skilled, slick boxer. I mean, I think people have been calling for that for a long time.
Oh, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, I don't see Benedelli be allowing it.
I mean, we got to see for what it's worth is like a lot of these big, high-profile fights like that are not going to get made unless the money is there on both sides. That's pretty much it. You know, even though the talent can compare with each other, the competition can go up against each other. If the pot of the money isn't big enough for both sides to make money, it's not going to happen. Like Spence Crawford, that's not going to happen this year either.
No, I don't think
so.
It's
not. But I don't know. I like Davis, so. I like Davis, and people say, oh, you know, he couldn't finish off a Gamboa until the 12th and blah, 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 this, and that. I still like it. I still like him, and I still think, like, at 135, I mean, what if you fought like a Mikey Garcia, even though Mikey just signed with the Zone technically? But I mean, like, what if you saw Mikey versus Tank at 135? I think that's an interesting matchup.
It'd be an interesting matchup. Yeah, you know, I'd love to see that fight, but I think
that would be pay-per-view. See, that would be a perfect pay-per-view for that.
No, I would agree with that, definitely, yeah. I just think Mikey's looking for those big checks to, on his way out the door. That's why he's fighting Jesse Vargas to try and get a win at 147 and then chase Pacquiao.
Yeah.
He's just looking for that big money.
I mean, honestly, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets Pacquiao.
Well, Jesse Vargas today has been saying if he beats Mikey, he wants Pacquiao because he wants revenge.
Oh, gosh. The new generation, Jesse Vargas. The new generation. If he's listening, him and his team, you guys need to bring that nickname back. The new generation, Jesse Vargas. I mean, everybody knows that a Mikey Pacquiao fight would be a lot bigger. They know that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
They know that. Especially if Mikey looks good against Jesse Vargas. I mean, he's making what, reportedly $7 million for this fight?
$7 million for the one fight.
And there's a clause in the contract that says, like, you know, if DAZN matches the subsequent offer that he gets after that fight from anybody else, then they get the rights to his fight. But if they can't match it, then he can go to that other offer. I mean, like, I think he knows, like, okay, like, if PBC is going to pay me more than $7 million, it's going to be for the Pacquiao fight. I mean, who else is going to get more than that money, more than $7 million, with anybody besides Pacquiao?
Nobody.
Exactly. I think
you're looking at Floyd Mayweather type. Floyd's probably the only person you'd get more money than fighting Pacquiao, I would imagine.
No, right. You're totally right. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could see them maybe, like going back to Tank Davis, you know, a hypothetical with Mikey Garcia on pay-per-view. What would the purses be there? Could they match him? Like, hey, we'll give you $7 million for this fight.
That'd be interesting. You see, I think if it's going to be a big fight like a Pacquiao fight,
yeah,
I think DAZN have the pockets to be able to match it. Is it going to be worthwhile if it ends up Mikey Garcia and Keith Thurman? Is it worth it? Maybe not to offer that kind of money. Maybe to keep Mikey for future fights. But like you say, after beating Jesse, the only really big fight that you could draw astronomical numbers is Pacquiao. And for Pacquiao, if you're looking at Pacquiao for his terms and of his career, you know, Mikey Garcia has the name. He has the 4-weight world champion. And Mikey's not a huge puncher.
Right.
Where you'd worry for Pacquiao, you know, that's going to put him into retirement.
No, right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Mikey's power does not, you know, rise to a level, like you said, to hurt Pacquiao. So I think Pacquiao, you know, if he took that fight, would be totally fine. But they would make that fight more. PBC would make that fight more because it's Pacquiao, who already is a proven draw. And you got a Mexican-American fighter, who's already, you know, showed that he can draw on pay-per-view, you know, against Errol Spence. I mean, I think Mikey was smart in that negotiation with DAZN. I think he knows that. I mean, they're paying him $7 million to fight Jesse Vargas. Who is that his highest payday? I'm assuming that's his highest payday.
That other fight with Errol Spence, he had a lot of money from that as well. I think after he got his cut from the pay-per-views, he was at like 6, 7, 8 million. So it's
right.
It's similar, but I know he's missed out on some fights. You know, he said in the recent interview with us that he'd actually never been officially offered the Lomachenko fight. But since coming back from his dispute with Top Rank and kind of, he was kind of with the PBC, even though he kind of said he was, you know, a free agent. The amount of money he's made.
Right.
He's been a very good self-promoter.
No, he has. And I think that's awesome. I mean, what about like a Linares? What if like a Mikey Garcia Linares?
A couple of years ago, yeah. The fact that he got... Not since he got smoked by Cano in the first round.
But Cano was big.
It takes the shine off that. And the fact that you're now seeing, I think what we're going to touch on later, you know, Ryan Garcia and Linares fighting on the same card to hopefully you know, main event together against each other later down the line when Linares is, what, has he turned into a journeyman now?
No, I don't
think
so.
When they're matching those two. So I don't think, I think 2 years ago, definitely, but not now. I personally wouldn't really be too interested in the Mikey Linares.
I think if Linares gets a couple good wins under his belt, and especially if he beats Ryan Garcia, which I still think he does, I don't think Linares is a journeyman. I don't think so. I think Cano was just a big guy that night. He was just overall a bigger guy. I still think Linares is good. I still think he has talent. And I wouldn't put Ryan in there with him. But, you know, we'll touch on that later. But I still wouldn't mind seeing a Linares-Mikey fight. But you're right. 2 years ago, obviously it had a lot more hype. But, I mean, who knows? But, I mean, like I said, you know, kind of wrapping a bow on this, I can see PBC after this fight with DAZN, Mikey Garcia, Jesse Vargas, I can see PBC going up to Mikey and say, well, you want to fight Tank at 135? You know, because Mikey said he can pretty much go to 135, 140, 147. I mean, yeah, I think he ideally wants to stay at 147, but.
Just I think the welterweight division just has those stars, isn't it? That's the problem. And has the money fights, you know, that's why everybody's shouting out Pacquiao and everyone who's bigger than that weight division shouting out Canelo. Because they want the big money fights, you know, it's a short career in boxing, so you want to make as much money as you can and then get out.
Yeah.
You know, if he beats Vargas and then he beats Pacquiao, I would actually like to see him go to 140. Ramirez, Progre, Mo Hooker.
Yeah, those sorts of names. I think at 140
I
don't think he'll fight Ramirez just because they're in the same stable.
True, yeah.
Yeah, that fight's never going to happen.
Progre?
Yeah. Progre, Josh Taylor, those guys, like, I would love those fights. Like, I think Mikey would too. I think Mikey would love, I don't think Mikey would mind going over to England and finding Josh Taylor over there. And I think they could, what's an ideal arena that they can draw a good crowd at?
With it being Josh Taylor, I'm sure he'd want to take them back to Scotland, you know, fighting one of the arenas up there.
Yeah. Oh, he's Scottish, huh?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Even though the World Boxing Super Series was in London.
Yeah. I mean, I could see Mikey going on over there. I mean, you know, drawing a crowd, you know, and then people would show up, not just for Josh Taylor, but for Mikey. We never see guys like him. I mean, they showed up for Lomachenko when he went over there because they're like, well, he's probably never going to come back, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. The good thing is there's a lot of talent between 135 and 147. There is. And then, you know, going back to Tank Davis's win over Gamboa, I mean, now he's got that regular WBA world title. I mean, I think Tank, he has to fight it. He has to fight somebody.
How long have we been saying that for so long, though?
He has to fight somebody. But I think, Mayweather Promotions, Mayweather, they're all taking their time with him. And what is he, 22?
25.
He's 25?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. I thought he was way younger than that. So, I mean, he's still obviously a young guy. But, that just kind of throws everything out the window. I think he needs to start, you know, picking up these names.
I think he does because I think, you know, like everybody in life, the older you get, the harder it is to lose. Lose weight, especially right. Those guys in the smaller, lighter divisions, they tend to retire a little bit earlier because they're having to make weight constantly.
Right.
And he's already struggling with that when he's young.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we'll see. But I really think that, like, he needs a live body across from the ring from him in his next fight. I really do think so. I mean, who are the champions at 135 right now?
Lomachenko, Devin Haney. Then obviously you've got Teofimo Lopez now has the IBF.
That's true. So one belt's at Top Rank, one belt's at DAZN. And then, I mean, do you want to call Davis's regular belt a belt? One belt.
Lomachenko's got obviously a few of them. Teofimo Lopez has the IBF. Devin Haney has the WBC. And then you've got Luke Campbell and Javier Fortuna are fighting for the WBC because Devin Haney got injured and is now the WBC recess.
That's crazy.
And then
that's ridiculous, man.
Lomachenko's the super duper duper whooper whooper champion or whatever it is.
That's ridiculous. The recess. And they still charge him a sanctioning fee to be in recess too. Like you have to pay us for rent. But I mean, we'll see. But I mean, I don't think anybody should hold their breath for any unification fights unless it's Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez. But I wouldn't mind, like people want to say Lomachenko Davis. I'm leaning more towards the Lopez Davis. Two young guys, they got knockout power. They're, exciting. I think a Lopez Davis fight would be awesome.
It'd be interesting to see what they do. I mean, I'm still looking forward, for the official date for Lopez and Lomachenko. And then see what does Lopez do? Is that him done at 135?
Maybe. I mean, they've been saying that he's
18 months or so.
Yeah, they're like, he has trouble making the weight. That he's going to move up to 140 or something. Like, maybe that's the plan. Maybe like, okay, let's get him this payday. He'll lose. He'll move up to 140. And he's like, okay, well, I'm a former world champion. The only loss I have is against Lomachenko, the best fighter in the world, blah, blah, blah. It's a narrative. I understand. I mean, it makes sense. Or Lomachenko gets an interim defense in between. So he fights a lesser opponent before he fights Lomachenko to get a defense under and get another little bit of a payday. And then he fights Lomachenko. Then Lomachenko beats him. And then he moves to 140. I think that's the plan.
Kind of off subject a little bit, but when he moves to 140, dude, that's good. That's a group of fighters up there.
Oh,
Paul Gray, Taylor.
He's definitely gonna have to like
Teofimo
really,
Lopez, Ramirez.
That's a group right there. That might be the best in comparison to like 147 at least. That might be the best division of talent when that happens.
That'd be an interesting. But, interesting division for 2020, with all those guys. You still got Zepeda, Cattrall, Pedraza.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. But going through to fight previews, the 10th of January, this Friday, Friday Night Fights, from the Ocean Resort Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on Showtime, the self-proclaimed, quote, greatest woman of all time. Self-proclaimed, by the way. Clarissa Shields, 9-0, goes up against Ivana Habizin, for the vacant WBC and vacant WBO super welterweight women's world titles.
Who said Showtime were out of boxing?
Who says Showtime is out of boxing? They had Davis within the last couple weeks. Now Clarissa Shields. They're still there. I mean.
No, they're not.
I mean, they still are. I mean, like people predicted the demise of HBO and it obviously it went away. And people have been predicting the demise of Showtime but.
How is this headlining the card?
Well, they need it. They have the Charlos, Davis, Shields. I mean, all the other ones are fine on Fox.
See, Espinoza must be furious with PBC.
Oh, yeah. He must be pissed at like PBC and Al Haymon. He's like, man, you guys just...
giving us the scraps?
Seriously. But...
interesting fight. It's supposed to have been made twice last year. Obviously, the first time, I believe, Chris Shields got injured in August. It was then supposed to be in October, and I'm sure people are listening to this are fairly big boxing fans, and that was the time that Clarissa Shields' brother attacked Coach Bashir, and obviously he ended up in hospital. So
yeah, that was ridiculous, man. That was a ridiculous scene. That was an embarrassment to the sport.
Habibson has said that she's going to dedicate the fight to Bashir. She's not too sure whether he's going to be cleared to actually travel to the fight. And be enough to be in a corner.
What a moment that would be if she wins, to kind of get that revenge. That'd be awesome. I think that's a feel good moment because that was a horrible look for the sport when that happened.
It was a horrible look for the sport, and I also thought it was a horrible look for Clarissa Shields, the way that she acted afterwards.
Yeah, and the only reason she apologized after is because she started getting a ton of heat for it.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure her PR team or whoever her promotional company is, Salida Promotions, I think, probably told her, like, hey, you should go out there and put an apology because your image looks really bad.
I don't think
she wanted to apologize.
It was an Instagram Live she did or something like that?
Come on, man, that's despicable. That's horrible.
Saying that she can just fly in another coach?
Yeah. Like, that's despicable, man. Like, come on. You're a U.S. Olympian and stuff like that. You're arguably the best female fighter in the world. Come on. And then this guy just got knocked down and might have had brain damage. I mean, what if the guy died? That was a horrible situation. That was just I don't know. I hope the bad blood really comes out in this fight. I really do. I really do. I hope, you know, we get some type of action. I mean, because what, I mean, everybody knows, like, female fighters, like, they don't really get knockouts. They do 2-minute rounds, so the rounds go by a lot quicker. But I hope there's some bad blood there. I hope so.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping for an upset on the night. You know, Chrisia Shields, I hope she takes a loss just because of what happened the first time, even though obviously it wasn't her. It was,
I think she needs it to humble herself.
And exactly, that's what I was going to get to next. I think just to kind of humble her, because she calls herself the GOAT. She kind of goes around, you know, fighting, saying we should get equal pay when, no offense, but the women's boxing doesn't attract that type of money.
I mean, it's a business.
It's a business. It's, yeah, you know, it's supply and demand. You know, you don't see people on the undercards earning, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. It's the same for them, you know.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, look at like Ronda Rousey or something. Like, she was a proven draw.
Yeah, she had to, like, she had to wait till she got to the pinnacle of the spot, yeah, and was a game changer.
Yeah, she was a star. Yeah. Like, she was arguably the biggest star, like, you know, in terms of the fight game, like MMA and boxing, like behind like Mayweather and Pacquiao during that time, she was probably third.
Yeah.
So, arguably.
So big she ended up in, she did movies.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and she, you know, so it can't happen. You know, it can't happen. But, like, yeah, people got to understand it's a business at the end of the day. And, like, yeah, it's sometimes that hurts the sport because you can't see certain fights or something like that because of the business side of things. But it's been, like, especially, like, in the last 20 years, that's how it's been. When, you know, television became more prominent, when money became a lot bigger, you know, a part of the business. Of course, politics became a lot more prevalent. You know, networks became involved, you know, like, the reason why we saw a lot of fights in the 80s and stuff, like Hagler Hearns and all these guys and Sugar Ray Robinson, all these guys, like, you know, the politics at that time and all the promotional banter wasn't as prevalent as it is today. You know, the money wasn't there. You know, imagine those fights now. We'd probably wait for them just as long as we did, like, Mayweather Pacquiao.
Mm.
So, but, you know, it is what it is. Also on that card, Alicia Napoleon Dynamite, 12-1, goes up against Ellen Cederos. There's two O's?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? 7-0. This is for the WBA and IBF super middleweight female title. What do you think about that fight? The record, I mean, I'm not familiar with these fighters, but the records seem pretty decent.
Alicia Napoleon, you might recognize. She was on, I think she's been on a few Lou DiBella cards, fights out of New York. It looks like they've obviously stuck these on the undercard, so Alicia Napoleon can face Clarissa Shields later down the line.
Yeah.
If everything goes as planned.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's usually what happens. You know, like we talked about Linares being on the Ryan Garcia event. They're building that. That's what happened. That's what happens in the business. And also, some people picked him as prospect of the year, right? Is it Jerron?
Yeah, Jerron Ennis, 24-0.
24-0 goes up against, all right, you got this name. Go ahead.
I would have said Bakhtiar Ibiov.
You better be right, Mike.
14-1-1.
You better be right.
Jerron Ennis, as Danny touched on, you know, widely regarded as one of the top prospects in boxing. Two emphatic knockouts on Showbox in 2018 from Philadelphia. Has 10 first-round knockouts and has yet to go past the sixth round. Was a standout amateur who won the 2015 National Golden Gloves. Was ranked number one as an amateur at 141 pounds before turning pro. One of my favorite fighters, even though he's had a lot of fights, still kind of young, good style, mixes up his punches really, really well. I definitely think 2020 will be a breakout year for him. I think he'll get the victory on the night.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Showtime and, you know, the promoters obviously are backing him in terms of, like, you know, the win because he has the most upside. I mean, we get it. So, Jerron Ennis. How old is he? Does it say?
He's still young. I think he's 25, 26.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if he's in the middle right there, he is getting up there where in age where he's pretty much entering his prime years as a fighter. So I think eventually he needs to, you know, get some competition across from him. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Also this Saturday, the 11th. Of January from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas on DAZN. Hey, the Alamo Dome holds a lot of people. That's a big arena.
They won't send it out.
No, not even close.
No.
I just noticed that. I was like, wait a minute, that's a big arena. Jaime Munguia, 34-0, goes up against Gary Spike O'Sullivan. You might remember Spike O'Sullivan as a potential opponent for Triple G when the rematch with Canelo, the first one fell through, right?
Yeah, you know, looks like the bad guy out of Gangs of New York.
He does, yeah. I think he was in that movie. He just lies to people, but he looks exactly like the bad guy. Who was that actor? I forgot. But O'Sullivan, 30-3. This is Munguia's first fight at middleweight?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So Munguia already vacated his 154-pound world title, and Munguia is now under the tutelage by trainer Eric Morales. Yes, right, the Tornado, the famous Eric Morales, one of the best Mexican fighters in the history of the sport. What do you think about that move?
Well, this is Morales' second fight with Munguia. Kind of hard to judge, obviously, because I think, as far as I know, has Morales ever cornered any fighters before officially?
I'm sure he has, but they haven't been high-profile names. I mean, that's what I think.
It would be interesting because is Morales going to try to make Munguia into the style of fighter that he was because that's something he knows? Or is he going to look at Munguia and, you know, look at the things that he does well and just polish those? Because as we've touched on, I think, several times, in my opinion, you know, he's kind of more of a Triple G style of fighter, somebody that's going to, like, cut the ring off, probably take a few punches, but he unloads. You know, he's just a juggernaut. He's just going to go in there. He's just going to wear you down with big punches, solid punches. And as you can tell, you know, when he fought, who was it he fought? It was the Irish guy.
Oh, in Mexico?
Yeah.
There was a controversial decision?
Yeah, where he pretty much lost, but he didn't get the decision.
Gosh, what's his name? It'll pop up. But anyways, I know who you're talking about. Continue.
So just, you know, Munguia is one of those fighters that when he gets somebody that likes to move around, you know, he struggles to really corner them. He's not that good at shutting off the ring.
So do you think, and I think I've talked about it before with you, but do you think that, like, an Abel Sanchez would have fit better?
Dennis Hogan.
So you think an Abel Sanchez would have fit better with Munguia's style? Because, you compared him to Triple G,
yeah.
And I totally agree with that.
I totally agree. I think Abel Sanchez is somebody who they should have gone for, you know, because originally they went for Robert Alcazar, who tried to make Munguia, you know, fleet of foot, you know, tried to make him into an Oscar De La Hoya, you know, didn't work. So I think they should just look at what he does, polish that, refine that, make him better at cutting off the ring, you know, just wearing people down with these heavy punches, you know, because he's a big, strong guy. You know, he's got a lot of knockouts.
Imagine Munguia ended up going with an Abel Sanchez, and Abel Sanchez starts training him and gets him polished and kind of trains him like a Triple G to the point where, I mean, they're both DAZN fighters. Like, imagine that story, that narrative, where if he gets Munguia ready enough and he calls out Triple G to fight him, and Triple G's old trainer, Abel Sanchez, is training his opponent, and he goes up. Like, imagine that story. How do you not think about that?
Just retires him.
Imagine that. I think it would have been crazy.
Sixth and final fight for DAZN.
I think that would have been crazy. But, I mean, you know, Munguia is from Tijuana, Mexico, and, I'm sure he, like, wants to be, like, around the city. And Morales lives in Mexico and Tijuana, so, you know, it's convenient for all them down there. So I understand that. You know, so if he trains with Abel Sanchez, he would have to come up here to Big Bear, up here to Southern California and train up here, and Big Bear's up in the mountains, up the hills, up in the mountains and stuff like that. So he would have to be up there for, 6 to 8 weeks and stuff like that, you know, pretty much isolated, which maybe he just didn't want to, you know. Maybe he just didn't want to. But I think for the betterment of his career, and in terms of, like, really getting the talent out of him, just like you said, he kind of has that Triple G-esque, you know, kind of attacks you, knockout and stuff like that. I think Abel Sanchez would have been right up his alley.
I agree, and I think that whatever he does, I think he needs to take his time because we've seen, you know, not against the very top ends of talent in the division below, you know, like a Dennis Hogan and people like that, you could see that he had some very big flaws. So I think that, you know, moving up, you should fight a host of people, you know, your Gary O'Sullivan's of the world, people like that, you know, maybe like a Michael Zarafa, people like that, just to hone his skills before he gets a chance of, you know, fighting for another title. Because obviously, you know, he was the WBO champion. So, you know, in the WBO world, when he moves up a division, he's actually essentially the mandatory, or he can call for
a mandatory.
But he's not ready for the top ends of that division. You've got what? Canelo Alvarez, Triple G,
Jacobs,
Chris Eubank, Derevyanchenko, Andrade. They would all beat him, in my opinion. Murata, he'd beat him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Andrade's really that. I think he's overrated.
But he moves.
He moves, but like, I just don't think like...
I agree. I think he's overrated, but I think Munguia is. Munguia had a title long before he should have done.
Oh, yeah.
And that was his problem.
Oh, yeah. But I don't even think any... I don't think Golden Boy or any of them... Zanfer, I think he's with Zanfer. I don't think they expected that either. And they were just like, oh, wow. Well, it happened.
Yeah.
Let's use it.
They just bought it off Saddam Ali.
Yeah. So, much. I mean, it is what it is. But, yeah, I think Munguia stops him in the fifth. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Munguia may be too much for him. Because, you know, Sullivan's not exactly the most skillful, technical of fighters.
Yeah.
I think it'll end up turning into a war. Munguia will just be too big and too powerful for him. I think like round six.
He's going to send him back to the gangs of New York. Back to acting. Also this weekend from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Atlantic City is starting to get some fights again, huh?
Yeah.
On ESPN, Jesse Hart, 26-2, goes up against Joe Smith Jr. You may remember Joe Smith Jr. from... knocking out Bernard Hopkins out here in L.A. at the Forum, knocking him out right through the ropes. Were you at that fight? I was there.
No, I wasn't at that fight, but it's interesting because Jesse Hart said in the build-up to the fight that Bernard Hopkins was his idol.
Didn't they train from, like, aren't they both from, like, Philadelphia?
Yeah, they're both from Philadelphia, and
that's,
Jesse Hart...
That's crazy.
Jesse Hart wants to get revenge for his idol for Philadelphia by putting a bit of a beatdown on Joe Smith Jr. So interesting story going into the fight. Both very fan-friendly fighters, both really wear their hearts on their sleeves. I think this should be a great fight, probably the fight of the weekend, really.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very competitive fight. I mean, Jesse Hart gave, was it Gilberto Ramirez, right? Remember, didn't he fight him twice, I think? He gave him two tough fights, if I remember. I'm pretty sure those are the only two losses he has on his record, but I remember those were pretty competitive.
Yeah, he fought Gilberto Ramirez.
He fought him twice, right?
December 2018 and also the first time in September 2017.
Yeah.
Both 12-round decisions.
Yeah, so I remember those being pretty competitive. So I think this is a good fight. I think, you know, both of their at the point they are in their careers, I think it's a good matchup. I'm going Hart on this. I think Hart's going to take it.
Yeah, I would think so. Joe Smith Jr.'s had a few injuries over the years. Jesse Hart's been a little bit more active. Interesting fight. Really could go either way. Just depends who lands that big that shot first.
Yeah.
And a great division. Very interesting, strong division that they're in at the minute. Kind of overshadowed by all the Eastern Europeans, though.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I mean, hey, you know, whoever gets this fight, especially if it's like an emphatic fashion, you know, can probably be put on the radar.
Oh, yeah, Jack, I think whoever wins this, they'll be in contention for, you know, a Bivol, a Kovalev comeback fight, maybe even Atabekov. But would you really want to fight that guy?
No. I think they would probably go after Bivol instead of Beterbiev. I think everybody knows that Beterbiev is the best fighter in the world at 175 right now.
Oh, he's a beast. No, yeah. Bivol, at least with Bivol, you're not going to get a broken jaw or something like that.
Bivol's a technical guy.
Yeah, he's a lot more technical. You just got a 12-round beatdown instead.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. But you're right, though. I think this is a, you know, it's not like a really high-profile fight in terms of names, but especially us as boxing fans, like, we know that this has a potential to be a pretty exciting fight.
I don't see it going 12.
No, I don't think so either. I think it goes 8.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
I think it goes 8. Yeah. 8 or less, but I think 7 or 8, it goes around there. So we'll see. But I'm going Hart. Where are you going?
I'm going to go Hart, actually. I think Smith just had a few too many miles on the clock, a few injuries.
So we'll see. Jesse the Hitman Hart. See if he does it. And then the news and notes of the program here. We touched on Ryan Garcia earlier, who's just had his fight announced. He's fighting on Valentine's Day, your favorite holiday, Mike. Ever since you moved to the States, you told me my favorite holiday is Valentine's Day. So
tomorrow, I'll be spending that watching the lovely Ryan.
So there you go. Ryan Garcia's fighting on Valentine's Day, the 14th of February, out here at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. Which, you know, it's right next to Disneyland, not too far, maybe a mile or two. Ryan Garcia, this is going to be his first pretty much significant arena that he's going to headline.
Yeah, on the first few days of the tickets going on sale, he sold the first, would you call it a ring? The first ring of seats. I don't know whether...
Yeah, like at the bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He opened up just one full entire row surrounding the stadium. I know he sold that out.
But that place is like, I think 12,000 to 14,000. I don't think he's going to come close to that.
Are they going to put the rest on sale, though? Or are they just going to open one or two rings and call it a sellout because that's all they put on sale?
Well, that's what I think. Like, he has a big social media following and stuff, but his following is teenage girls. Like, they're younger girls and stuff like that. And younger guys, maybe. Who knows? But, like, it's not... He doesn't have the following like where people like are gonna come and see him. Like they have jobs and stuff. They're younger kids. That's his following, you know, which is great that he's known. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that if they get like Logan Paul and those YouTubers to promote the fight for him, to help them out, to promote it to their crowd, so they get their audience to want to go see Ryan Garcia, like, oh, we want to go see him because Logan Paul's promoting him or something like that, like, you know, stuff like that. If they utilize that platform, which I don't think they will, I don't think that's going to happen, then I can see it maybe happening. But, you know, I think Golden Boy, like, knows, like, Eddie Hearn is smart because he's been using Logan Paul and those YouTubers for fights. And they know that's Ryan Garcia's audience.
No,
but they don't want to let them borrow Ryan Garcia.
You know, Jake Paul's sparring it. Mosley's gym.
Really?
Yeah.
What the hell?
He's been using the local guys around here for sparring.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Maybe we have to make a trip.
Up in Big Bear, isn't it, for the listeners?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's where Triple G goes, right? He uses Mosley's gym when he goes up there.
Yeah, he uses Mosley's gym. Yeah, that's true. Damn, that's crazy. That's crazy. But you're right, though. I don't think it's going to come close to a sellout. I think that... They're putting him in Anaheim at the Honda Center at a venue that big because he was bitching and complaining a couple months ago about his contract and saying this and that, and he wasn't being promoted rights, and he was like complaining on Twitter and stuff like that. And so Golden Boy, you know, obviously didn't want to lose him to like the PBC or something, so they re-signed him, giving him more money. And I think Golden Boy would want to put him on like Fantasy Springs or stuff like that, or StubHub, like crowds and venues like that still. But I think they know, like, look, like, we need to put him in arenas that big, even if he doesn't come close to selling these out, because, like, you know, he pretty much, they know that Garcia has the power right now. Obviously, it showed because he was complaining on social media and he gets what he wanted. It's like a baby getting what you wanted. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody disputes that. Like, and people are like, oh, well, he let the guy get paid and stuff. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, that's a bad look, especially after they released Cancio not too long ago, after he talked to the press. And like, it wasn't like he was complaining how Ryan was complaining on social media. Cancio was like saying, like, yeah, I feel like I should be promoted. Right. I should be on the Canelo card and stuff, like, and he was a world champion. He was a world champion. And then they fire him after they say, oh, he feels like we're not promoting him, right? Like, Ryan Garcia said the same thing. He said the same thing. And it's like, man, that was a horrible look. That was a horrible look. But, you know, it is what it is. Obviously, people know that Ryan Garcia has the bigger upside in terms of popularity and making money. I think going back to my original point earlier from the business side, that's business 101 in boxing, if you want an example, you know? Like, because obviously from a talent perspective, Cancio is more talented, but Garcia brings the eyeballs. He brings the money. No, so that just shows you who they chose.
Yeah, you can, with the model that they're going down with, you know, social media stars like Logan Paul, Jake Paul, KSI, you know, jumping on and fighting recently, you know, in Manchester, the Staples Center, and then fighting in, you know, in February in Miami.
Yeah.
It just kind of shows you how much of a business it is now.
I mean, like, if you were De La Hoya, if you're Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy, would you let Eddie Hearn, would you let Eddie Hearn use Ryan Garcia for one of those YouTube fights again? And when they know, like, if it's like a Jake Paul or Logan Paul versus whoever again, and it's like another, I mean, like, there was a lot of people who tuned in for that fight, like a lot of non-boxing fans, and there was a lot of celebrities in that arena at Staples Center.
Do you mean for the commentary like you did last time, or actually fighting?
No, to fight.
I think they should. You know, they're on DAZN together, and Golden Boy don't have a huge stable. So I think, you know, letting them use Ryan Garcia to fight, do commentary, make an appearance, you know, would be good for them, because then they can go to Matchroom and borrow some of their fighters. Because, you know, I think we've touched on before, Golden Boy, you take out Canelo, you take out Ryan Garcia.
Yeah.
Maybe take out now Virgil Ortiz. It's very, very small pool.
Yeah, and they know that. But I honestly, I would let Eddie Hearn use Ryan Garcia for one of those events. Because in the long run, the investment, the return on investment they're going to get from that is going to be bigger, because the audience that they're reaching, that's Ryan Garcia's audience. Him coming out, you know, and then all these little girls and all these younger kids, like, seeing Ryan Garcia, like, he's obviously a good-looking cat. You know, he comes out and they go crazy and stuff for him and stuff like that. And then Logan Paul has him on his, like, little YouTube shows and stuff like that. That's his audience. That's who you need to tap into. Like, but I get it. Like, you know, Golden Boy doesn't want to let, like, share. Like, oh, no, he's our guy. Like, we want to make all the money off of him and stuff. But I think, like, even like a one-off, I would tell Eddie Hearn, yeah, use him. Eddie Hearn wouldn't be against it, because that'd get him more eyeballs.
I mean, Matchroom can pay him.
Yeah.
It's all coming out of DAZN's money anyway.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's what I would do. Like, you got to look at, I mean, because Golden Boy would still, you know, make money. You know, they would still get a cut. So, except Matchroom would mostly be doing all the legwork.
It's interesting. And, you know, the fight coming up is going to be interesting as well. You know, people might recognize Francisco Fonseca. You know, he fought Javonte Davis. He's also fought Tevin Farmer. He got two losses. Javonte knocked him out in the eighth, and Tevin actually went 12 rounds with him, unanimous decision. So it'd be interesting to see what Ryan does in that. Is he going to be able to go in there and blow him out like he did Hester? You know, I think both of us weren't expecting him to go in and do that.
No, not at all. I mean, I think it's a good step up fight for Garcia, just because Fonseca's been in there with, like, Davis and some other guys. Like,
12 round with Temuth Farmer. He's not the biggest puncher, but he is skillful.
Yeah, so I think it's a good step up, and, you know, it at least it shows something. You know, but I don't know. And then I don't know if you mentioned it, but Linares is also on that card. He's going up against Carlos Morales. That's probably the co-main, would you say?
Yeah, I'd imagine it'd be the co-main, if Ryan lets him be co-main.
I know, right? It's ridiculous. So, I mean, we'll see. But obviously, they've been talking about Ryan Garcia versus Jorge Linares. But, I mean, depending on how Linares looks on Saturday, or this weekend, or whenever that fight is, February 14th, I'm sorry, which I think he's still going to look good. I think Linares still beats him easily. I just don't see Garcia's just not ready for that type of talent. I could be wrong. Maybe they're going to pay off Linares and be like, hey, I think it's time.
I mean, yeah. I agree. Unless Linares has got, you know, very old very quickly, you know, if they actually make that fight like Ryan's been talking about, and then, you know, it looks like they're going to, sticking them on, you know, the card together, you know, is Ryan going to call him out after he wins? You know, are they going to do a little face-to-face in the ring to sell it? You know, they're going to promote some kind of drama to sell the fight. Interesting fight, and I'd have to give Ryan a lot more credit if he gets in there with Linares and actually does manage to beat him.
No, you're
right. That would be the first fight where I'm sat there and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, he actually has got something.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, but I also think that Ryan Garcia also, he takes a lot of this criticism he gets, like on social media especially and all that stuff, like he really takes it to heart and it really bothers him.
Yeah, it seems to. You can, I mean, the temper tantrums he has on social media.
It really bothers him.
You can see that, you know. I've been on there, well, the one where he ended up getting what he wanted against Golden Boy.
Yeah.
You know, he was constantly going back and forth. Instead of picking up the phone and speaking to, you know, Eric Gomez and people like that, he put it all on social media.
I mean, I think he knew that his, like, his stock was already high enough where, like, even if they don't keep me, PBC or somebody else will sign me because I'm popular. He knew that. He wouldn't have done that unless he knew that, like, you know, I mean, we'll see. I don't know.
He can, he, you know, he's lucky that he can lean on, you know, people like Canelo and the Reynosos.
Yeah, he's lucked out. He lucked out right there. Yeah. He really lucked out right there. But I don't know. And now he really thinks he's probably unstoppable too. But we'll see, you know.
Hey, learned behavior. He spat his dummy out when he got what he wanted.
That's true. That's true. But we'll see, though. I mean, like you said, like, if he goes after, if he fights Linares and if he beats Linares, assuming Linares, like, still has something left in the tank, which I still think he does. I still think he does. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And then wrapping up the show here, let's touch on the personal beef on social media that's happened the last couple days between Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. First of all, Terrence Crawford was calling out Gervonta Davis, after Davis's win against Gamboa, saying, like, you know, oh, I beat Gamboa in his prime or something like that. It's just like, how are you going to call out a guy who's two divisions lower than you who just moved up to that division? You know, like, it wasn't like Davis was, like, they were tweeting, or he tweeted at Crawford first. Like, where did that come from?
I just found it odd how last week, maybe the last 2 weeks, Terrence Crawford is just suddenly, has he just found Twitter? Because he had it before and he would post very rarely. He definitely wouldn't get drawn into, you know, social media wars. I don't know whether, you know, he's going to follow the likes of, you know, Jojo Diaz and Tevin Farmer, probably being the latest kind of fighters who, you know, made a fight really on Twitter, you know, going back and forth, and eventually, you know, the fight got made. So I'm hoping that maybe someone told him, like, hey, did you know, go on there, start a little war with Errol Spence to the point where you two and the fans pretty much just drive that fight forward and it gets made.
I mean, I think that's the only course of action that they have.
I don't see it in... It should be in 2020, but no, I would be surprised.
I don't see it.
Yeah, no. I don't think it would be. I would love it to be. The only thing I could see it happening...
Sean Porter's already said that he's willing to fight Crawford, and they've asked Crawford about it, and he was, like, hesitant. Like, he wants Spence. But it's just, like, Porter gave Spence, Garcia, Thurman. Porter is, like, arguably the toughest fight in the whole division, regardless if he's, like, lost the big fights. He's arguably the toughest fighter to fight.
Yeah, that's probably why he doesn't want him.
Yeah. But it's just, like, come on, man. Like, you talk about wanting all these guys on the other side of the street, as everybody calls it. And when Porter says, like, yeah, let's do it, and then they ask Crawford about it, he's like, nah. Like, he's like, he shies away from it. And then he tries to call out Spence after Spence has been in a car accident? Come on.
But that's the thing I was going to get to, is Bob Arum said in that interview that he'd heard that Spence wasn't, you know, as in good health as the PBC had made out.
Well, maybe that's why Crawford's calling him out now.
Exactly. And also, in the interview that Spence did, you'd have thought he'd come back and be like, you know what, I've just been in a tragic accident, I need a little get-back fight, a little warm-up fight. He was like, no, I want Manny Pacquiao. And is that because he knows that it's a cash-out? Because maybe his body, maybe his jaw, maybe his teeth, or whatever it is.
Yeah, what happened to Danny Garcia?
There you go.
You're right.
So is TC, does Crawford know? Like, has he heard rumors like, hey, get him now? Because he's fragile.
He might, yeah. I mean, that's very, very likely. That's very likely. So, I mean, I don't know. That's very likely, though. but then there's also, like, somebody on Twitter mentioned that maybe it's top ranked Tank Crawford to do this. So, like, so they can get away with, like, fighting some other person at 147 who's not a name. And then they can utilize the excuse, like, well, Crawford's been calling out those guys. He's tried and tried and tried. So, like, we can't keep him inactive. You know, we have to put him in fights, you know. But, like, they're not the bad guys, you know. Like, there's bad guys on both sides. We have to admit that. There is.
If he doesn't fight a PBC fighter, who does Top Rank have at 147 that he could fight of name? Without sticking him in with some, like, unusual, unknown name that I honestly can't think of anyone.
No, I don't see anybody.
See, I think if it's not Errol Spence, what, Danny Garcia or Sean Potter, really? Yeah. If it's not going to be Kell Brook, it looks like it's not.
Unless they get one of the 140 guys to move up.
Yeah, like do a Ryan Garcia. Pull people up from the division
below. You never know. I mean, they need something. They need a name. But, yeah, I don't see Crawford getting any of the – unless Crawford goes to Fox, which I honestly think he should. I honestly think he should – Top Rank should just let him go over to Fox and fight a Garcia, fight a Porter.
Black Ops.
Yeah. And just go over there, you know, and beat them.
He should do. I think he should. They should take the risk. If they fully believe that he is the pound for pound best, then let him go over there because he'll come back with the belts.
Exactly. But, you know, that's not going to happen anytime soon. You know, PBC is really like blocking him out. They really are. You know, and initially when Crawford signed that deal with ESPN and Top Rank, you know, 7 years or whatever, it was, you know, he wasn't really worried about like, oh yeah, the fights are not. But now that the heat is piling up and he's like, he's a world champion who's like looked at as one of the best in the world, but he can't get these fights made. It's just like, now it's like, he's feeling the heat, you know? But I mean, what are you supposed to do? You know? Like I'm in the boat where like, I don't rate him as high as other people because he doesn't have the resume. I see that he has talent. He has a killer instinct, but like that doesn't do it for me. Like you need to have the names.
No, I agree. He has everything. You know, watched him. He's got that mean streak, like he showed against Cal Velasquez.
That mean streak is ridiculous.
But at the end of the day, you need to have the resume.
Yeah.
At some point in your career, you have to get to your peak and you have to fight other people in and around you who are on that level or better than you. And then, you know, it's all there. He has the titles, but he mopped up the 140 division and...
Yeah.
You know, what big names did he fight?
Ndongo?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a weak division to clean out at the time. He is undisputed. That's history, but it was a weak division at the time, so we'll see. But thanks again, guys, for listening to episode 63, the first episode of 2020 in a new decade of boxing. You know, as I mentioned, make sure to go back and listen to our bonus episodes from Phoenix, Arizona at the Jacobs Chavez fight. Eddie Hearn was on, Andrew McCart of IFL TV, Ellie Seckback, and Chris Mannix. So we got quite a bit of interviews to go back and check those out, especially the Eddie Hearn one. That was a pretty good in-depth one. But Mike, go ahead and tell them where they can follow us on social media.
Twitter and Instagram at TheLastRound12, and be sure to join us next week where we'll review the Munguia against Gary Spike O'Sullivan, Jesse Hart, Joe Smith. And then we'll be looking forward to the big Julian Williams against Jason Rosario fight.
We are ready. We are ready. So once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.